is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here. Let's do another legislative check-in. State Representative Cedric Hayden. And today, joining us live from the state capitol, Cedric, thanks for being on.
Yeah, of course, Kyle, I appreciate the opportunity to be on. So as you mentioned there, we are live here in the state capitol today. We have been meeting on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the purposes of moving bills forward. So that's another day there. We still don't have bills on the House floor yet, though they're still working their way through committee. So it's actually kind of a moving in day for me here.
And is everyone there on these Tuesdays, or is it a limited number of lawmakers?
No, it's a pretty limited. Well, there's always 40 on the House side. We have 60 members, and so you have to have 40 members to have quorum. So they do, the leadership does coordinate to make sure that there's 40 people there. But literally what's happening on the House floor now is they read what we sometimes call a pony or description of the thousands of bills that are being introduced. Constitution requires that a description of that bill gets read. And so you have, they have speed readers literally that read through the titles of those bills or the pony on that bill that kind of explains briefly what it does. They're not reading full bills. And this is how they introduce bills. Those bills, it's called first reading. And so those bills go from a legislator, maybe through an advocacy group or whoever requests the bill, that goes through one of the lawmakers, that goes to the attorneys. The attorneys write it up and coordinate that with current law. If there's current law on the subject, they entered into that section of law, and then they send it back to the legislator. And today is the last day that bills can be dropped. So that's something that I'm looking forward to. And after this, representatives or senators only have five priority bills. And so we'll see a slowing down of the thousands of bills coming forward. So today's the last day to drop bills. And then once they get read on the House floor, which is, you know, it's not technical, it's important that people are able to know when the bill is moving forward, it goes to either the president or on the House side, Speaker Kotek, and then she assigns that to a committee. So we're still in the process of assigning bills to a committee, and committees are just hearing bills for the most part. We have been moving a few bills here and there, which have mostly to do with budgets and things like that.
So basically with this structure, then, is the idea to wait as long as possible before you have more people in the building?
Well, we had an announcement. I'm here in the Capitol today. I wouldn't say that we take turns, but I haven't come every Tuesday morning, as you ask how many people are here. So there might be 15, 16, 17 people that aren't here. There's not really a rotation list, but if it's not reasonable for you to get there, you're not missing anything by not being here, as long as they have the 40. So I'm here today, so maybe somebody that lives a little further away can not have to be here to help make that quorum. And so those bills, are moving through the process, and it was announced on the House floor today that we're going to start sessions on March 8th on Monday and Tuesday mornings at 11 a.m. So that means that they are expecting bills will start moving through committee next week. And then after that, they will be referred to the House floor, and we'll have something to start discussing on the House floor by March 8th.
So by that point in early March, then, is the assumption that everyone will be there?
Yeah, the assumption is that, you know, again, we only need 40 to have a quorum, but this has been really unusual, and it's kind of a technical reading of the bills. And so it wouldn't be normal that you have 15 or 16, you know, up to less than 20 people excused. And these are excused. These aren't absences. They might be working in district or working with constituents or something. So an unusually high number during this kind of virtual system until we get the House floor. And then I would expect, you know, only to see one or two or maybe three, which is the norm for any legislative session on any certain day. If you got 60 people, you know, two or three probably aren't going to make it for various reasons.
And how are people dealing with just the differences and the logistics of running the session that way?
Well, what I'm noticing is that the folks that are used to kind of in the bubble, insider baseball, if you will, that are used to how this system works, have been able to utilize it quite a bit and have access to us through various means of setting up, you know, we call it Zoom, but it's actually team meetings as the software that we use mostly here in the Capitol. So they've been very good at that. But what we haven't been able to connect very well with is individual members and so or constituents to be able to get in. I had requested, I sit on the COVID committee. That's obviously a big subject this legislative time. And so I'm working closely with Chair Dexter, and I'm the vice chair of that committee. And we were able to bring in, specifically bring in, we worked together to bring in individuals that meet that 80-year, 75-year, 70-year, because we wanted to hear from them specifically how is their experience going in getting access to the vaccinations. And we knew that based on the way things have been going here, that people have been having a really hard time. So the legislative assistants through our suggestions reached out, and we had some individual members rather than normally what you get is agency or big advocacy groups. But I wanted to drill down to individual constituent members, and we split that up between metropolitan area, Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon. So that approach, I think, was really helpful, but you got to work with the chair to get those individual members. Otherwise, it seems that people are having a really difficult time getting on to testify.
What about some of the priorities for this legislative session as things evolve? What are you hearing from the Democratic leadership about maybe some of the things they want to be the main focuses of this session?
Well, I was on a task force for childcare, so there's a priority there to deal with, you know, under COVID and childcare issues. And there's some pretty big moves. I'm still reviewing the recommendations on maybe some agency changes in childcare, and do you leave, you know, kindergarten through or preschool through 6 years of age or first grade as part of the Oregon Education Department, or do we split that off? So we're going to be looking at that issue. That's a, you know, maybe not a hot button item, but a really big change as far as the makeup of it. I think of it as Department of Human Services. We used to have all of the services in there, and then they split out the Oregon Health Authority or the Oregon Health Plan, the medical side of that, to a separate agency. So you create a lot of bureaucracy with that. So that's some of the, you know, kind of the functional things that are items coming forward. And then we are going to start seeing some controversial stuff as far as gun regulation and things like that, which is going to end up in the healthcare committee that I'm on. And so I am talking with the chair about how are we possibly going to have people present their concerns or support for this in the 15 minutes that these bills are getting. And so we are, I am advocating for some, you know, evening sessions that we can get more time so folks can weigh in on it. So there's that type of stuff. And then, of course, priorities around COVID and COVID recovery, priorities around wildfire recovery. Those are the big items that we see moving forward.
Obviously, between those last two topics, COVID recovery, wildfire recovery, a lot of potential for expenditures. Where do you shift it at the same time that less revenue is likely to come in because of all the business shutdowns and the economic situation in the state? How is this all going to be balanced out?
But it's going to have to balance out on the forecast. Of course, we get a final forecast, or what we call a May forecast, is that's really what budgets are set on. Now, the governor, Governor Brown, the executive branch, sets out the governor's budget, and that gives kind of a guideline for the ways and means. Ways and means is basically just the funding priorities that we have in Oregon with federal funds. We spend about $93 billion every 2 years. But this part that we're talking about is the Oregon portion. Will we have $22 billion of revenue coming in? Will we have more than that? Will we have less of that? And that's not all discretionary spending, but that's non-federal funds, meaning coming from mostly Oregon taxpayers through your payroll deductions of your taxes. That's the main bulk of Oregon's revenue. And there are other, you know, lottery and taxes on items like tobacco and things like that that contribute to those funds. So May forecast is the big one, but we're going to have another one coming up here very soon. And so that kind of gives us a guideline of where we're going to spend. But we are being told in these ways and means that the guess is about a 7% reduction in current service level. Now, if you take current service level, we talked about that a little bit, that's usually around 6%. And so they're expecting about a 1% cut from last year's physical dollars amounts, but we don't know exactly where that will be at. And that would be viewed as about a 7% cut from current service level.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. State Representative Cedric Hayden, live from Salem. The interview will be a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1247 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249. Lars Larson coming at 1. KQEN Local Talk at 4. David Littlejohn and Katie Shook with True Wealth Radio. On tomorrow's program, State Representative Gary Leaf will join us on Inside Douglas County. Cedric Hayden with us now, Republican lawmaker who represents parts of Douglas and Lane County. And coming to us live from the Capitol with a number of things going on. As you talk, Cedric, about the budget situation, when you look at just what has happened in the past 10 months, small business has been particularly hit hard. That has required a lot of shifts, sometimes on a weekly or biweekly basis. That's got to be resulting in a big hit to the state budget. You talked about some of the numbers a bit ago. But looking forward, what can the state do to help some of these businesses to try to get through the next few months?
Well, there's two sides to this, Kyle. As you know, funds available and then funds that the state wants to raise, what they call revenue raising. And so a couple of the bills have to do with the way the federal government helped out states, the federal government helped out individuals, and the federal government helped out large and medium-sized businesses. Under the federal tax code, those individual payments or $600 extra a week, that kind of thing, on if you lost your job or if you had a small business and they helped pay for a couple of months of your payroll with the intent that those small moms and pops would keep their employees employed during the COVID time when maybe they didn't really have the work for them. I think that program as a whole was pretty successful in the federal government. Even Democrat Congressman Peter DeFazio is saying that those funds and recommending to the Oregon legislature, if you will, through, you know, just public media, that those funds should not be taxed. But here in the legislature, we have members, colleagues of mine, that have introduced bills that would actually tax those funds. And so they're looking at those funds with an eye of revenue raising to help close this gap. And that's not an area that I think would be helpful to our individuals or to our small moms and pops. And so I think under COVID, with my approach would be, or my hope is, under COVID, you know, our businesses took a hit, pretty much regardless across the board. Took a hit during COVID. And so we at the legislature, families took a hit, family budgets took a hit, had a little less cash flow coming in. We at the legislature need to follow suit with that and figure out how to do our essential services with a little less money than we might have had otherwise.
And are a lot of folks agreeable to that, or is this something that's going to be a big topic of debate here in the next few weeks, few months?
You know, it's been interesting. Normally, there's the conservative, fiscal conservative or Republican side, if you will, that, and there's exceptions to every, you know, stereotype, but that say, no, you know, we don't need to tax this. But I actually, in talking to my colleagues, and we are friends on both sides of the aisle up here, they are really hesitant to tax individual federal stimulus or payroll protection loans and stuff like that. And so I'm actually hopeful that that concept doesn't flourish here in the legislature. And there's a lot of my Democrat colleagues that are very leery of doing something like that. And so, you know, I think that they are, and I'm good friends with some of the ones that are the co-chairs or chairs of the budget committees. I think they are realistically taking a look at how do we tighten our belt, so to speak, rather than go after those kind of funds.
Well, and even recently, Congressman Peter DeFazio over the weekend, I think it was, put out a release asking lawmakers and the governor not to move in that direction.
Yeah, he did. That's what I was referring to, where he came out and publicly said, hey, you know, these federal funds, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but basically Peter DeFazio said these federal funds were to help small businesses, to help folks. Let's not tax them. And so that's something that I've been a strong advocate with my colleagues up here, that, you know, basically going to them and saying, come on, you really, you know, COVID hit everybody really hard, and we don't want to come back with a, you know, as we try and recover from that, we don't want to come back with another round of taxes that they weren't expecting to get. And so I have hope that we won't do that.
As the vaccine begins to go out, and statewide, though certainly not in Douglas County, statewide we're seeing the case numbers begin to go down a bit right now on a consistent basis. What's your hope for maybe the economic conditions for the balance of this calendar year?
Well, you know, the forecast that we have had from those that crunch what the, you know, what the expected or the pre-forecast, if you will, those economists that take a shot at saying, here's what we think what the economists that do the forecast are going to say, if you will, right? The pre-forecast to the forecast. The forecasts have been better, meaning less deficit of funding compared to what they thought it would be. And so the hit hasn't been quite as big. You know, there was folks that were saying up to $4 billion. We're looking at about $1.3 billion. But these are still guesses based off the May forecast that we will actually use to do those budgets. But, you know, it's going to be important that we keep as many of those funds in the pockets of Oregonians, because they have, you know, they have taken a pretty hard hit going forward. As far as the vaccinations coming out, I'm on that COVID committee. We are getting vaccines out there. It has been a little frustrating for me that some of the populations that I would have liked to seen prioritized haven't gotten the penetration, if you will, or the coverage that, you know, in our seniors and disabled populations that other states are prioritizing. Oregon was third to the last in those populations. And, you know, they'll say, well, that's because the supply wasn't there. True. I will agree with that. But if you have a set supply and you divert to different segments of the population that aren't your high risk, That's a decision. That's a choice that's being made. And so we lag behind in our seniors. Our seniors are having a difficult time getting online, getting registered. We had some really great testimonies, personal stories yesterday on that. And I look forward to talking with OHA about, you know, how can we can't do what other states do with a 1-800 number and let our seniors pick up the phone and schedule this.
30 seconds. What's your top priority over the next few days?
Well, I'm getting moved into my office here and just getting ready for the bills that come to the House floor.
All right. State Representative Cedric Hayden, live from Salem. Thanks for being on today.
Thank you, sir.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.